Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, we start with the good, as we usually do, at least when we have one. And earlier this week, we didn't get around to it on the podcast, but it made a lot of noise here in Washington and beyond that the Army had secretly imposed a rule change back in August that allowed for waivers to be issued to circumvent the ban on mentally ill people being allowed to join the U.S. Army. And there has been tremendous blowback to that. And now the USA Today story that broke that new rule change has forced the Army to pull back, although the Army's explanation of this doesn't seem to be fully admitting what they actually did here. But I'll get your reaction to it. Again, USA Today. Army Chief of Staff General Mark Milley said Wednesday the Army has rescinded a September memo stating that people with certain mental health issues, including self-mutilation, would be eligible for waivers to join the service. Milley, appearing before reporters, said the Army rescinded the memo because of an article published Sunday by USA Today. He maintained that the policy on considering such waivers had not changed, but had been delegated to a lower level for approval. Milley said the Army had done a terrible job of explaining the policy, and he credited USA Today for bringing the issue to his attention. There wasn't a change in policy, Milley said. There cannot be a change in policy by someone who doesn't have the authority to change policy. I know, it sounds circular. The memo from September 7th said that people with a history of self-mutilation, bipolar disorder, depression, and drug and alcohol abuse would be eligible to obtain waivers to join the Army. The change, which was not announced publicly, was made in August, according to documents obtained by USA Today. A statement to USA Today last week, vetted by several Army officials, reflected that a change had been made in the way the Army dealt with waivers for those mental health conditions. So, Jim, the good news here, ultimately, is that they're not going forward with this, but there's a lot of people who don't know what other people in the Army are doing, it appears here, or else they're doing a really bad job of PR.
Yeah, sorry, this is not just a good martini. I guess I find this a reassuring martini, Greg, because when you first hear this news, you're like, wow, this sounds like a terrible idea. Having said that, those of us who have not served in uniform generally try to have a certain amount of humility, a certain amount of caution when it comes to evaluating military policies. Generally, you want to trust the people in the leadership of the U.S. Armed Forces. You figure, okay, this sounds crazy to me, but maybe there's some good reason or there's some logic here that I don't see. And that logic really never came forth. And so it means not just, you know, the good news is that they are not going forward with this idea. But the other thing is that what seemed like a crazy idea was actually a crazy idea. Our gut responses were correct on this, did evaluate this. It just seems, you know, like I don't, you know, manic depressive or emotional instability. There were numerous people in uniform, former decorated Navy SEALs, who were saying, look, you know, if you think combat is physically challenging, the mental and psychological challenge is every bit as hard. And obviously many people who are tip-top mental shape and psychological toughness find combat exceptionally difficult to deal with and end up dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. So somebody who goes into that kind of environment with those kind of mental challenges or self-harm, cutting themselves, things like this, boy, it does not seem like it sounds like the exact last place you would want someone like that to be on it. You would not want to be depending on someone else who had these sorts of problems to protect you, to watch your back in a very tense situation, and vice versa. You would not want to see themselves succumbing to these mental problems during a you know firefight or something like that. So thankfully, a bad policy has been averted, and it's kind of reassuring to hear that well, you know, sometimes a crazy idea really is every bit as crazy as you think it is.
Yeah, so hopefully that's the end of it, and they're not going to try and slip this in with another memo a little bit later on down the line. All right, let's move on to our bad martini now, Jim. And as we have documented extensively here in the past week, there is a candidate for U.S. Senate who is under tremendous scrutiny right now for alleged sexual misbehavior, to put it mildly, in the past. There's been numerous allegations, of course, against Roy Moore. What about a sitting U.S. senator? These allegations aren't from the time that Al Franken was in office, but he, of course, is in the Senate now, and the allegations aren't that long ago. We're talking about December of 2006. The person making these allegations is Leanne Tweeden. She's been a model. She's been involved with various sports shows over the years, so a lot of folks know who she is. And she now works on the morning show on 790 KABC in Los Angeles. And she was on a USO tour in December of 2006, which included a lot of different celebrities, which included the headliner, who was comedian and now Senator Al Franken, as she writes it. She was originally supposed to just MC the performance for the troops, but then Al Franken decided to write her into his skits. And here's where her narrative picks up. When I saw the script, Franken had written a moment when his character comes at me for a kiss. I suspected what he was after, but I figured I could turn my head at the last minute or put my hand over his mouth to get more laughs from the crowd. On the day of the show, Franken and I were alone backstage going over our lines one last time. He said to me, "We need to rehearse the kiss." I laughed and ignored him. Then he said it again. I said something like, "Relax, Al, this isn't SNL, Saturday Night Live. We don't need to rehearse the kiss." He continued to insist, and I was beginning to get uncomfortable. He repeated that actors really need to rehearse everything and that we must practice the kiss. I said okay, so he would stop badgering me. We did the line leading up to the kiss, and then he came at me, put his hand on the back of my head, mashed his lips against mine, and aggressively stuck his tongue in my mouth. I immediately pushed him away with both of my hands against his chest and told him if he ever did that to me again, I wouldn't be so nice about it the next time. She says she felt disgusted and violated. She still went on with the skit, not only that night, but the rest of the USO tour, because she didn't want to disrupt things. She didn't report it to the military at the time. But she says that Al Franken didn't stop there. She says the tour wrapped, and on Christmas Eve, we began the 36-hour trip home to L.A. After 2 weeks of grueling travel and performing, I was exhausted. When our C-17 cargo plane took off from Afghanistan, I immediately fell asleep, even though I was still wearing my flak vest and Kevlar helmet. It wasn't until I was back in the U.S. and looking through the CD of photos we were given by the photographer that I saw this one, which is a picture of her asleep in the vest and the helmet, and Al Franken, with a mischievous grin to say the least, on his face and his hands over her breasts. And she goes on, "I couldn't believe it. He groped me without my consent while I was asleep. I felt violated all over again, embarrassed, belittled, humiliated." So, Jim, obviously this is a time from Harvey Weinstein on down where women are feeling very much emboldened to come forward and tell their stories about how they've been harassed, how they've been assaulted over time. And now we have a sitting U.S. senator we got photographic evidence of at least half of this story. And so it'll be very interesting to see what happens here in the reaction to this.
While you were giving the description, Greg, it turns out that Senator Franken has issued a statement in response to this, and put your cringing faces on, people. Quote, "I certainly don't remember the rehearsal for the skit in the same way, but I send my sincerest apologies to Leanne. As for the photo, it was clearly intended to be funny, but wasn't. I shouldn't have done it." End quote. So so that's all settled, right, Greg?
Apparently so.
I mean, Lisa, so when he says, "I don't remember it that way," that's not saying I did not mash my tongue into her mouth while holding the back of her head, which I think is probably the most serious allegation in her description of events. I think the photo is crude and creepy and the sort of thing you'd probably expect a 13 or 14-year-old boy to do, not a grown man. The interesting thing is when he says, "Oh, I don't remember it the same way." Greg, wasn't Senator Franken the guy who believed that Jeff Sessions should be forced to resign because he didn't remember his interactions with the Russian officials correctly?
Yes.
Yeah. Life comes at you fast, huh, Senator Franken? Right? I mean, you know, look, maybe he genuinely doesn't remember. I just think you should be a little more sympathetic to other people who are having difficulty remembering these things. And lo and behold, we have a photograph of him rather creepily. You know, I see, you know, she's wearing a flak jacket. I can't tell from the photo whether he has actually just touched her, is about to touch her. But it's very clear he is mimicking groping her with this leer towards the camera while she is sleeping. That is a creepy move. I think, you know, there are some fraternity houses you get thrown out for doing stuff like that. Just completely inappropriate behavior. And you can say, "Oh, this was a long time ago. All that stuff. Oh, I wasn't a senator." Look, grown men should not behave this way. This woman is on a USO tour. She's attempting to do something to help men and women in uniform, and you're acting like a creepy jerk around there. I had put forth the question. So look, this, you know, yes, this was a certain number of years ago. Yes, this was basically a forced kiss. What is, and I put this out there, not having 100% certainty myself, I've asked on Twitter, what is the appropriate consequence for actions like this? My suspicion is that, you know, quite a few Democrats will say, well, that's an apology. That's good. That's all. That's all you need to do. No harm, no foul. My favorite response so far, Greg, has been, quote, seating Roy Moore next to him in the Senate chamber. As somebody put out today, all of the explanations of like, Roy Moore is terrible, but I can totally understand Al Franken, or Al Franken is totally different. Oh, that's, you know, I it's going to be hear a lot of that over the next couple of days, I suspect. And, you know, we really shouldn't. I mean, if a guy's a creep, he's a creep, regardless of partisan affiliation.
That's exactly right. And sadly, the Senate has a long, long history of this, from Ted Kennedy to Bob Packwood, obviously, is perhaps the worst of all. All right, Jim, let's stay somewhat on the same topic, but move to a different story for our crazy martini. And this comes to us from the pages of the opinion section of the New York Times. This is written by a woman named Caitlin Beatty, or Beatty. She writes for Christianity Today. And while she admits that the Mike Pence rule, which is that he doesn't dine alone with a woman who's not his wife, or be in a room alone with a woman who's not his wife, she says, sure, it's going to protect him from scandal, but it really, really frustrates her, and it's a terrible, terrible thing. She says the Pence rule is inadequate to stop Weinsteinian behavior. In fact, it might be its sanctified cousin. And here's her example of why this is such a horrific, horrific rule. Last year, a ministry leader in the Chicago suburbs asked if I would join his organization's board. I agreed to meet him at a popular breakfast spot to learn more. Upon arriving, I scanned the crowd to find the man who matched the website photo, and another man was sitting next to him. Immediately, I knew what was going on. Both men were warm and complimentary. We share the same faith and read the same Bible. But a decade into my career, I've rarely had a more alienating meeting. I was made acutely aware that my existence as a woman was a problem that needed to be managed in a public setting. I did not join the board. And she goes on to give a couple other examples of other people as well. And Jim, obviously, there's concern that women are missing out on career opportunities by not getting one-on-one opportunities that male colleagues might get. But the idea that this fairly common technique, certainly in ministry and perhaps in other walks of life as well, would completely alienate you and shock you and make you uninterested in being affiliated with these people anymore kind of misses the point.
Yeah, there are occasionally some fair points in that article. One of the things it mentioned was a guy who was so strict about this policy. Apparently somebody he was traveling with, the woman had thrown out her back. She asked if he could carry her suitcases to the room, and he carried them to the doorway and stopped because he didn't want to carry them. He wouldn't want to be alone with her in the hotel room together. Call me crazy, Greg. I'm not a Christian theologian. I try to have some humility when it comes to faith matters, but I think Jesus would be okay with that. I think Jesus would say, look, my son, pick up the suitcase, put it over there, wish her well, and get out. There's no harm, no foul. This is what I mean when I say you'd want her to pick up your suitcase if your back was thrown out. So do unto others, my son. But most of it, I don't think when she says, oh, men are doing this because they feel they can't trust themselves or control themselves. Look, there are other things that this sort of Pence rule will protect you from. It will protect you from false accusations, mm-hmm. which, you know, sad to say, occurs. It's very tough sometimes to tell, but there are people who have made accusations and then recanted. If you are never in that kind of circumstance, you cannot be accused of doing something inappropriate. The second thing is that, look, it's an unfortunate fact of life, but there are those who will claim that certain women are sleeping their way to the top. If you are never in that circumstance, people cannot say, oh, there's something inappropriate going on. They're committing adultery. They're having an affair or something like that. This is not to say the Pence rule is for everybody. If you don't like it, you certainly don't have to do it. But I feel like Pence and the men who decide to operate under that procedure, I think they have good reason to do so. And I don't think they're being crazy and unreasonable. What I'm really struck by, Greg, I don't know how things operate in the radio industry. I only know my personal experience. When this Pence rule first came out, I kept hearing from people who say, no, it's totally normal to travel with your boss, to have dinner with him, to have drinks with him late into the night at the hotel bar. And I'm like, whoa, really? Really, is this common? Maybe in certain professions it is. At the heart of this article is the contention, is that these sorts of personal one-on-one interactions between a boss and a subordinate in casual environments, in non-working environments, in social environments, are not just standard, but really required for career advancement. And I remember when this first came up earlier this year, it was interesting. There was a small percentage who said, yes, absolutely. This is completely how you get ahead in this business. You're expected to do this. This is perfectly normal. I heard from someone who had worked on Capitol Hill for lawmakers for a long time, somebody whose opinion I respect a great deal, who said yes. And in fact, she felt like she had lost out on various opportunities because she was a single woman. And generally, the lawmakers she was working for were married men. And the married men, for obvious reasons, didn't like the idea of traveling with a single woman. I sympathize a great deal. I also think that it just seems, this will stun people. My bosses generally don't want to have drinks with me late at night. I don't know why. I think I'm a very attractive, charming person, but they haven't. So there's a part of it. It's like I'm struck by this perception that this is how promotions and great opportunities are really earned, as opposed to actually, doing your actual job and the work you actually do. I think there's a bit of mythology about how the workplace operates that is at work here. So but I just think like the timing, particularly in light of our bad martini and these new allegations against Senator Al Franken. Look, this is really awkward timing to say, yeah, Mike Pence is the bad guy here. I think women would much prefer a world where men operated by the Pence rule than one where they operated under the Harvey Weinstein rule.
I think we can all agree on that. Let's hope we can anyway. Jim, good to be with you again today. My vacation starts tomorrow. Chad Benson will be here for me. Enjoy that time and have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Greg. Enjoy your trip.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday when Chad and Jim bring the Three Martini Lunch.